And when we talk about Gru, what size do you think he had in mind when he said it was smaller?
Well, let's put it to the test. If you have a sauropod, let's say sauropods are those things that we used to call brontosauruses.
Yeah.
And it weighs, 4 to 5 times the size of, let's say, an elephant, which is the biggest land animal that we have that can actually walk and not run. Elephants really can't take their feet off the ground very much. If you compare that in size and you say, well, it's 4 times the size, some of them even 5 times the size, and in general, dinosaurs were about 4 times the size of the animals that we have today, then that would could easily say that the Earth could actually be as much as 1/4, only 1/4 the size that it is today, and the dinosaurs would make sense.
Maybe about the size as the moon is now.
No. So actually, it would be a little bit closer to a slightly larger Mars.
All right.
So it would have to be like Mars. So a dinosaur would weigh 1/4 what it weighs today, something in that range, if you want to just do a rough estimate. Now, that would not necessarily mean that the gravity would be 1/4. It might be 1/3 because you'd have, you know, the middle of the Earth would be more dense, and now it would be a little bit more open, perhaps. So you're in that range, 1/4 to 1/3. So then you kind of look at it and go, well, if that's the way it was, then I can take the Earth back, and I can put those continents together, and dinosaurs would make sense. And, you know, the fact that there were hardly any mountains on Earth, that would make a certain amount of sense because that would mean that the crusts were thinner. And, you know, it actually fits the geology. Funny. Odd. And so I thought, as a science buff at the time, this guy, whoever this guy is, he knows what he's talking about. Well, they decided, no, that wasn't the way it was going to be. They sensibly decided, because, you know, it was a little bit much to think that the Earth could have grown. After all, the Earth has been here for 5 billion years.
Yeah.
I mean, how could it be that size now?
And then you got to come up with a theory, how does it grow?
Yes, and that was the big problem. Basically, they said to whoever it was, and of course I didn't know at the time that it was Sam Carey, they said, how can you explain how the Earth could grow? And he didn't have an answer. Now, he couldn't exactly have an answer because he was a geologist. He wasn't a physicist and he wasn't a cosmologist. So the likelihood that he would have an answer as to how the Earth could grow, even a theory, would be pretty extreme because he was a geologist, a very good geologist, but still a geologist. And it's one of the things that have bothered me in the comic book business and medicine, all kinds of areas of expertise, and that is that scientists seem to specialize these days. There's no, like, general scientist that knows everything. They just know their specialty. So Sam Carey knew geology. Geologically, he was totally correct. But he couldn't explain how the Earth could grow because he had no theory to explain it.
Yeah.
Later on, he tried to do it, but it was really too late. He had pretty much thrown his career in the stove and turned on the flame. It was pretty much it for him.
Not Which happens. It
yeah.
happens to great minds, doesn't it sometimes?
Yeah. He redeemed his theory, his career, but essentially he never redeemed the theory. The good guys had won. We discovered that the Earth had stayed the same size all this time, and Mr. Carey had gone back to Australia. Now, of course, I'm sitting there behind my drawing board going, I can see this in my mind. I can see how the continents come together. He clearly has the right idea. Everything in the history of science makes this make sense. There were no real mountains in those days. There must have been a thinner crust. There were no, in fact, oceans.
So listen to this one,
this will really knock you out. The scientists, if you ask a scientist, or in the, back in those days, you ask a scientist, where do you get ancient fish fossils from? He'll say, well, we get them from Utah. We get them from Italy, and we get them from China. You say, well, don't you get them from the deep ocean? They say, no, there are no ancient fish fossils down in the ocean. So you say, well, that's not possible. The oceans
there's got to be
down there, you know. And they say, no, we get them in Utah. Really? Well, we had shallow seas on the continents, you see, and those shallow seas were all these ancient fish. And you say, well, what about the oceans? So, well, no, we don't have, they're not down there. So what they did was the scientists and the Navy, they went around and they took core samples of the bottom of the ocean to see how old it was, because you could do that. You know, you send a core sample, pull it up, and you can measure how old the bottom of the sea was. Well, in the first 10 years that they did this, they couldn't find any part of the ocean that was any older than 70 million years old. Next 10 years, they actually found some areas that were older than that. They took some areas off the coast of North America and off the coast of Asia that were as old as, they say, 180 million years old. Now, 180 million years old sounds like a long time, but geologically, it's really not.
It's nothing when we're 4.5 billion years old.
And certainly, since life started 2 billion years ago, and robust dinosauric life, or at least reptile life, started 600 million years old, 180 million years old is not very old at all. So they couldn't find one place in the ocean that was older than 180 million years old, and in fact, a majority of the ocean is less old than the time that the dinosaurs died. Half the ocean didn't exist on the day that the last dinosaur died.
Where'd all this water come from, Neil?
Yeah, well, the water. If you have a growing Earth, I don't ask anybody to accept this theory.
I got to tell you, I love this theory.
All right,
let me
throw it out because I don't want to convince anybody. I just want to just talk about it, you know, because it's a little hard after a while to get. If you have a planet that's making stuff, okay, let's say you found a theory, and of course that's the problem. If you have a planet that's making stuff, you have to find out where it's going to make it. So the logical place is in the core, because it certainly doesn't make it at my aunt's house.
Sure.
So it makes it in the core. And as it makes it, it makes all the minerals and all the other things, because it's got to make the atoms sort of the way they are in the elementary scale. You know, it's got to make everything. And as it makes everything, it makes gases, which include oxygen and hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And any time it makes gases, of course, those gases tend to rise, and they will rise up through the rock of the Earth, and they will rise to the surface, and they will come out of, let's say, vents in the middle of the ocean, or geysers like Yosemite, or volcanoes, you know, where you get lots of rocks, but essentially you get gas.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost like people don't notice it, but you know that stuff that rises out of those volcanoes, that's called gas. And there's lots of gas in there. There's hydrogen, there's oxygen, there's carbon dioxide, there's lots of stuff there. And all that stuff goes into the atmosphere and makes your atmosphere. And when the oxygen and the hydrogen get together, they make water and they make clouds and they fall onto the Earth. So if your planet is growing, then you're making exactly the same amounts of all those gases, only increasingly as time goes by, so that the water that you had on the land, as the Earth cracks open and rifts open and spreads, and those big ocean basins open up, the water will drain off the land and into those new cracks, and they will form the new oceans, just like they did when that land was on a smaller Earth, and they had smaller cracks, and they would crack open, and you'd get the Grand Canyon and places like that, and they would drain into those areas. Like, if you go out to Arizona, for example, one of the things that people don't exactly see with their eyes is sometimes you kind of need to be an artist to do it. You see what you call tableland. You know, you get this flat land, and then it comes to this ridge, and it goes straight down like a plummet.
Yep.
And then it goes down to the bottom, and then you get this flat land again. And if you were to look at that and analyze it, you'd say, well, you know what it looks like? It looks like if I go all the way over there on the right, I'll find another one of those things going back up again, and it'll flatten out over on the top. And if I take those two pieces of land and I pull them together, that will close up, and I will have filled in that space. So logically, if I go back in time, what happened was that land cracked apart, you know, made that flat edge, and that flat edge on the other side, and then those areas pulled apart and made this flat land on the bottom.